Hello, this is Annie Bartholomew, and you're tuned to KTOO. This is the Juneau Afternoon. Today on the show, we'll get an update about CBJ activities from CBJ manager Kim Kiefer. We'll learn about tonight's presentation on nutrition and cancer by Stephanie Paver. That, a writer's almanac, bird note, music, and more today at 3 o'clock on a Juneau Afternoon. If you missed a Juneau Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org. This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. An Ojibwe staff was removed from the Duluth, Minnesota Civic Center courtyard last week. City officials say members of the city's Indigenous Commission ignored a deadline to remove the ceremonial object from the public space. J.P. Rehnquist from WGZS on the Fond du Lac Reservation has details.
This ceremonial staff, which some Indigenous community members say is an eagle staff because it is adorned with eagle feathers, and others refer to as an Ojibwe flag, had been in the courtyard for about 2 years without controversy. But in recent months, Anishinaabe leaders say the object had been vandalized on 3 occasions, which drew media attention. Ricky Defoe from the Duluth Indigenous Commission.
This staff here has been desecrated 3 times. The first time it was turned upside down and stuck in the ground upside down with the eagle feathers in the ground. The second time it was broken half. And the third time it was just pulled up over here and left in the bushes.
The spiritual nature of the object is one of the reasons Duluth City officials cited for its removal. In 2004, a series of court cases led to the removal of a Ten Commandments monument from the same plaza. The Native American community says there's a lack of their symbols in the city, which is littered with hundreds of monuments dedicated to European leaders, including one declaring Leif Erikson discoverer of America. Duluth City Administrator David Montgomery.
We acknowledge that, and we say, yeah, that's right. That's a fair statement. Let's talk about that. And we're more than willing to sit down with the community and have that discussion about what's the appropriate way to include that in the broader sort of scape of Duluth, and where's the best place to do that.
City officials and the Native American community will continue to meet to discuss long-term solutions on the matter. For National Native News, I'm J.P. Rehnquist.
U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius visited the Navajo Nation last week. KGLP's Rachel Cobb reports on the focus of the visit.
On Friday, Secretary Kathleen Sebelius visited the Gallup Indian Medical Center, GIMC, with Dr. Yvette Robidoux, Director of the Indian Health Service, as part of meetings with Navajo leaders on health care. Sebelius mentioned President Obama's commitments to Native Americans.
He will be gathering cabinet members in a White House Tribal Advisory Council.
Sebelius reminded the staff of GIMC that 2 of the 3 states in the Navajo Nation have decided to expand Medicaid coverage immediately, so that effective January 1st there will be 100% federal funding for the newly enrolled Medicaid patients.
There are lots of childless adults. There are lots of parents of kids who may for the first time qualify, and that revenue can serve sort of double duty here because it will mean that the federal government is pushing more dollars here to the Gallup Hospital and frees up IHS resources.
The secretary congratulated GIMC on achieving their recent Level 3 trauma designation, signifying the excellence of their health services, while acknowledging that the facility, which has been in operation for over half a century, is due for an upgrade. For National Native News, this is Rachel Cobb in Gallup, New Mexico.
Americans for Indian Opportunity, or AIO, brought together a group of indigenous ambassadors in New Mexico last week. Tobosu Okitsu is Ainu from Japan. Okitsu says the Ainu share many common concerns with indigenous peoples in North America.
There are several issues, but one is the dam construction of the river where it was very sacred for Ainu people, and also different land usage that the Ainu is fighting to try to get the back rights of using the land.
AIO is 20 years old, and this year's cohort includes representatives from Samoa, Japan, and Peru. On this day in 1948, the Arizona Supreme Court ruled in the case Harrison v. Levine, which gave Native Americans in the state the right to vote.
For National Native News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is seeking to fill two positions in our national studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are accepting applications for a senior producer for Native America Calling and resource development specialist to sell underwriting. Full job descriptions can be found at nativeamericacalling.com. Click on employment.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew, and I'm here with Kim from CBJ.
Hi.
How's it going?
Great. How about you?
Excellent.
Good.
So tell me about what's happening with CBJ. I hear you got some surveys that we're interested in.
Yeah, we've got a couple surveys that are posted up on juno.org. One is for the airport to give feedback on sort of the outside of the airport area, so the food service, that side of it. And so that's on juno.org. And there's also a survey for the Juno Transit Plan to give feedback on people that ride the bus, their thoughts about it, what's working, what's not working, what they would like to see, a variety of other questions with that.
What kind of things are they looking to introduce?
Well, what they're trying to do right now is just collect information. They want to find out how people are currently using the system and then give us some choices on, okay, if we had to change the system and the routing system, would you like us to have less time on Saturdays so that you can expand the weeknights? Would you want to decrease the weeknights so that you can expand on weekends? So it's sort of prioritizing, asking individuals how they would prioritize if they had an opportunity to do that.
And where can people respond to these surveys?
You can go to juno.org, and both of them are on the news, on the hot topics, on that front page. You just click on there, and it'll take you right to the surveys.
Wow. So what other hot topics are happening?
Well, we've got an assembly meeting tonight,
uh-huh.
So that starts at 7. We have a number of items on the consent agenda, and we have a number of items for introduction, and there's only one public hearing tonight, and that's for the FEMA maps and
FEMA maps.
FEMA flood maps. So that has been going on for a couple of years. There's been a number of public meetings throughout the community, and then the Planning Commission has gone through the flood maps for the last, I don't know, they've been working on it for the last 3 or 4 months. They've adopted those, and then they've moved them on now to the Assembly to adopt. And basically what the impacts of the flood maps have is if you have insurance, if you need insurance through the bank, they will look to see if your house is in a flood zone. And they've done some changes on what they consider the flood zones. And so we have just about as many people going into flood zones as going out with the changes in the maps. We're committed to the community to continue to work on updating those maps because your parcel could be in the flood zone, but where your house is could be outside of it.
Oh.
So they look at the parcel as a whole, and if it touches the flood zone, then they consider that being part of the flood zone. But you know that most properties around here aren't level. So there's probably a part of it that may be outside of it. And so we want to make sure that we get in and look at the topography and be able to really look at it so that people can go back and do what they call map adjustments, and our community development department staff can help people go through that process, but it allows them to get the topography and see, okay, this is really where the house is, and here's really where the flood line is, so it's outside of it. Or if somebody has undeveloped property, if they want to develop it, they can look at it and say, okay, can I develop in an area that isn't within the flood zone? Or if I'm going to develop, the new rules say you have to put it up on pilings, that you can't do fill. So there's some changes going on, and once again, the FEMA insurance only impacts those people that have loans for their house. So if you own your house outright, then that's an option that you can purchase, but it's not a requirement of the bank. And it's the flood maps you can find, once again, on juno.org, and go to community development, and you can drill down to your area to see what the new maps look like. But it's an ongoing change that we'll be working, as I said, with the community to continue to look at those.
And what areas of Juneau are becoming flood risk?
There's areas in Auk Bay, a lot of the waterfront areas. They're looking at different velocity flood zone areas that we weren't looking at and they weren't looking at before. They did a new model for the flood zones. And so a number of waterfront areas are being looked at. Auk Lake is being looked at and has some changes to it. There were some areas around Mendenhall Mall that also were in the flood zone, but there had been some work that had been done there in the past that we were able to continue to work with FEMA to get a lot of that out of the flood zone maps based on on-the-ground data. And so that's the hard part, is you really need to be able to get much more specific mapping than they tend to do. One of the things that we did this spring is we had a plane fly over, and they do what they call LIDAR, and so that allows them to get more imagery that will be able to help us. Hopefully by the end of the year that will all be compiled, and we'll be able to compare that information with the information that FEMA had from a couple of years ago and see, does it give us more information so that we can try and get people that truly are in flood zones? We want them to be aware of it, but we also don't want to put more people in there that need to be.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I hear that CBJ and AGT mining properties, there's a resolution about that tonight.
There is, and it's been on the assembly goals for this last year to continue to move forward at looking at the mine and what the pieces are. So there's a unitization agreement, and it's an agreement that's currently in place right now, and we made just a couple little changes, housekeeping changes on that. It's got a three, if the assembly approves this resolution tonight, it's got a three-year agreement that it's good for, and then it'll have to be reviewed again at that point. And the other piece is that both the AJT people and CBJ have to agree on anybody looking at the records that they have. And so that's just a little tweak, but it's something that's been there in the past and has been current. We just decided that it was time to look at it again, make a couple little tweaks to it, and continue to move it forward. And then at some point, if there is a small mining company that wants to come in and look at those records, we'd need to sit down with AJT and review their request and make sure everybody's on board with it so they can look at that.
And one last thing, the hyperbaric chamber at Bartlett.
So when the city disposes of property, over $3,000, it has to go to the assembly as a resolution to allow that to happen. So with the hyperbaric chamber itself is owned by NOAA, and they had a partnership with Bartlett Regional Hospital to do a hyperbaric program. In order to be able to have the chamber be working, it needs a compressor. And so what Bartlett did is say, okay, our part of this partnership is to buy the compressor piece of it. NOAA provided the hyperbaric chamber, and together they were able to create that hyperbaric program that was housed at Bartlett. That program is, Bartlett no longer wants to move forward with that program, and I don't know why, what the decisions were made to determine that that program wasn't going to go forward anymore. But NOAA will take the hyperbaric chamber, and what we're asking the assembly is to let us give NOAA the air compressor that will go with that chamber. NOAA has, last time I talked with people about it, they hadn't determined what they were going to do with the chamber, if they were going to keep it in Juneau or if it was going to go some other location.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And give me a refresher. Where can people go online to fill out those surveys?
Juneau.org is a great location. It's got information on the survey. It's got information on upcoming meetings. It has information on every department within the city, so it's a great place to have as one of your favorites.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your hair.
I love it. Wow.
Oh,
Yeah. You are tuned in to KTOO. It is Juno Afternoon.
Yes, it is.
With Colette Costa.
Yes, I am. Wow. What's up, kid?
Nothing much.
Oh, God. How come I... Oh, there I am. Hey, good job here. You got... You're getting the hosting gig. Way to go. Man, did you have to knock off? Well, anyway, it's another Juno, another beautiful, sunny day. How do people live in California? I don't know how they put up with this. It's oppressive.
How do they do anything work?
Oh, my God. It's just... I'm a complete spastic right now. I can't even control any bodily functions with the sunshine out. I can't think. Someone asked me if I could buy tickets to a show, and I was like, I don't know. I run the joint, and I can't even tell you. It's too sunny. I can't think. Sprinkle me with water. I'll be able to answer your question.
Sprinkle me with water. Might be able to run the board.
Okay.
All right. So we got some great stuff happening at the Nickelodeon. Tell me about it.
Well, okay. Just because you asked. You know, we have a big week at the Nickelodeon, or as we call it, the Gold Town. This whole week, we've been pretty calm. I've been trying to scale things back for the summer. We're doing the ongoing Filipino Film Festival, and I've added a couple new titles. And those are mostly in the daytime. I understand most people can't get out, but I did add some night shows of those next week. And if you get a chance and you haven't seen that Don't Stop Believing, the story of Journey, the guy who's the lead singer in Journey.
The new lead singer in
Journey.
Yeah,
he's Filipino. His name is Arnel Pineda. He's pretty cool, and it's a terrific movie. And then also Machete Maidens.
Machete Maidens?
Machete Maidens Unleashed.
Unleashed?
Unleashed Machete Maidens. Yeah, that's going to be next week, too, some nightly shows. It's all about, like, gonzo B-movie making in the Philippines in the 60s and 70s. So, like, Roger Corman and...
There was a music industry in the Philippines.
Huge. Movie industry. Gigantic. Yeah, all those, like, you know, Welcome to the Birdcage and Caged Heat, all those were filmed down there. Yeah, all those, both of those. Anyway, so, more importantly, my goodness... Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, this week, it's kookaburra sauce all over the place at Gold Town. We're doing, there's a little bit of something for everybody. I'm not going to lie to you. We have this thing going on tonight. Did you know that today is a Jewish observance day today? It's a big one. It's called, I shouldn't even say what it's called, so I'm going to say it wrong.
Go for it.
Tisha B'Av. That's probably wrong. It's the Jewish day of mourning. It's 2 days, 15th and 16th, but it's their Jewish day. It's their day of mourning because apparently every bad thing that ever happens to a Jew happens on the 15th or 16th of July.
Ouch.
I don't know why they get out of bed on these days. So, you know, mazel tov for them. But, and ironically, I've been showing this movie called Hannah Arendt. She was a journalist and a political theorist back in the day and also considered one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. Of which I am as well. And she was a student of Heidegger in Germany there. She was the one who conceived of this idea of the banality of evil. And she wrote a series of essays during the trials of Adolf Eichmann, which basically, in her own way, stated that maybe the victims of the crime were sort of also guilty of the crime because it's a very deep thought, and this movie will explain it all very well. And so I didn't know that this was a Jewish day of mourning. So you know, I'm a shiksa. Yeah, that's a non-Jew. Let's face it, I'm Catholic, so I can't pay.
I won't hold it against you, Colette.
I have enough dealing with my own holy days. But anyway, the rabbi, Dov Gartenberg there, he got a hold of me. He said, hey, this is this day of mourning, and, you know, you're showing this movie. I think these two things, they go together. Clearly, this movie, Hannah Arendt, she's writing about the trials of Adolf Eichmann, who was obviously... We killed him. We didn't. We all did, collectively, thankfully. Anyway, and she wrote this great series of articles for The New Yorker. They were very controversial in their time. And this movie deals with that part of her life. It's a biopic, or a biopic, depending on what coast you're from. And the rabbi is going to give a little introduction to the film and sort of put some context to it and the context of this day of observation. And then we'll have a little discussion afterwards. There's a lot of really juicy bits of information in this film. So, it tends to breed talking. So that's tonight at 7.
Oh, wow.
He's going to start talking at 6:40-ish. You know, we're very strict on time down there. That's today. Wednesday, we're skipping a day, I know. Wednesday, we have this other great movie called The Informant. I'm telling you, it's all about craziness. This guy, Brandon Darby, back when Katrina went off in New Orleans, Brandon Darby single-handedly stood on the front line and would not let them tear down houses willy-nilly until they had been searched for bodies. And he's like, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to stand here and help you guys hold your house. He became this really big social activist for the Ninth Ward. And, kind of like a folk hero. And then, boom, bang, bing, a few years later, he's being targeted by these kind of this subversive group for being an FBI informant.
No way.
Way. Yeah. And he, ratted on all these people at the Republican National Convention. And these guys who were throwing Molotov cocktails. Anyway, so...
What?
Yeah!
Molotov cocktails?
For sure.
This is an action movie.
This happened here in our country. So this movie, The Informant, it just sort of talks about this guy, Brandon Darby, who he is, what he did, why he did it. So that's going to be Wednesday. But
right
more
on.
Importantly, my friend, let's talk silent movies.
Shh.
Sound of Silence. Oh, that 10 seconds cost about $50. Sorry. So I'm super excited. Again, we have our Not-So-Silent Films Tuesday. Richard Dowling, who's a pianist for jazz and classics, is back in town, and he did some wonderful concerts this weekend, and he has graciously agreed to play for some more silent movies. And he really loved the Harold Lloyd that we did. So we were on the fence about whether we should do a different movie or do that one and whatever, and I know a lot of people...
What did you decide?
We decided that we couldn't not do it because Safety Last is such an incredible film. It's one of the best silent movies ever, and a lot of people didn't get to see it. But we're then also going to do another film. So we're doing two different movies. So we're doing one at 7 o'clock called Girl Shy, which is a wonderful little romantic comedy. Ring-a-ding-ding-ding. And then at 9 o'clock, we're going to do a repeat of, what did I say? Safety Last. And they're both marvelous films, live piano music, beautiful silent movies. Tickets are at Rainy Retreat Books or online, www.goldtownnick.com, or at the door, here, now, there, tomorrow, 7 o'clock. It's a huge week. I'm busting the seams, as they say. My seams have busted. I had to re-sew my skirt today. Because the seams got busted.
Shh.
Did I even talk about William Shakespeare this weekend? Did I even say that?
What?
Totally.
William,
dude.
Shakespeare.
Totally.
Juno.
You're right here. Yeah. William Shakespeare, as directed by Joss Whedon of Buffy the Vampire Flame.
No.
I don't know. Maybe you've heard of him. He directed this little movie called The Avengers last year. Yeah. So during his 2-week break filming The Avengers, he and his wife shot Much Ado About Nothing in their house.
What?
With all their friends who are super famous because they were in Serenity and Buffy and Angel and Dollhouse. And so now there's this great movie. And we have it all weekend. Joss Whedon, Shakespeare, Gold Town.
What time?
Magic! Oh my God, it's so magical. It's like David Copperfield just walked in. I don't know, all night. 7, 9, 4, 2, 5, 3. I don't care. All day. Just check it. Check it out.
Check it out.
Check it out, brutes. Seriously, though, Shakespeare this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, 7 p.m. God, I'm exhausted.
I don't know what to say.
I don't know. Tonight, Hannah Arendt, 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, Not So Silent Films. And I'm telling you what, I'm just going to say this. I don't mean to be rude. I'm not trying to be mean. It's not because I'm from Detroit. If you haven't seen one and you don't go to see this, you're dumb. I'm sorry. No, I'd take that back. Maybe you just don't like movies. Maybe you just don't like being thoroughly entertained. And tell you what, if you go and you don't like it, you just walk out and you go, yeah, it was okay. I'll give you your money back. I'll give you your money back.
She'll give you your money back.
Done. Wednesday, The Informant. Right wing, left wing, who knows?
I like it.
Oh.
Well, I got some piano music. You
want
to hear? Piani.
Da 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 da. Bop bop. Bugs Bunny. Oh, that's gorgeous. Let's do this. Bop 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 bop. Ow.
This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew, here with Tish Satry from Cancer Connection.
Annie, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah, I'm very excited. So you're here to talk about this event happening, right?
We have an event tonight, and we're hoping that the folks in Juno will come out and learn a little bit about cancer and nutrition. Cancer Connection is co-sponsored an event with Cancer Treatment Centers of America that happened to be in town today on a cruise ship with some staff and survivors. And we're hoping to have an opportunity to talk to folks about what's going on in their diet, prevention, all that good stuff that you need to know when you're dealing with cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's always good to have an educational event. You know, normally Cancer Connection is known for the health forums or for Beat the Odds or some of the things going up, but this is nice to have an opportunity to bring in some expertise from elsewhere in the country and a chance for not only the survivor community, but absolutely everybody in town to come down and learn a little bit about nutrition.
And you brought some experts here with you on the show.
We do. And if you'd like to introduce yourselves, ladies.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Paver. I'm an oncology dietitian, certified in oncology nutrition and nutrition support with the Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
And my name is Faith Williams, and I'm the loyalty manager at Cancer Treatment Centers of America, based out of the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania hospital. So we're excited to be here.
Wow, all the way from Philadelphia.
Yes, all the way from Philadelphia. We've got a network of hospitals around the country. So there's one in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, one in Atlanta, Georgia, Chicago, Illinois, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Phoenix, Arizona, and a small treatment center in Seattle. So I represent the East Coast.
The East Coast. And I'm representing Phoenix.
Wow. So you're from a ways, too.
Yes.
So what do you expect to share at the meeting tonight?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because many people don't know that 40% of cancer patients will die from malnutrition and not the cancer itself. At Cancer Treatment Centers of America, nutrition is an integral part of patients' treatment. There's one dietitian per every medical oncologist because we know the value that nutrition plays in cancer care. So we try to take a proactive approach to make sure that when patients come in, they know what kind of diet to be following, and everybody has a different priority depending on where they're at in their treatment course. And so we help guide patients throughout treatment so that they don't become malnourished. We know that malnutrition can impact response and tolerance to treatment, as well as, you know, decrease patients' quality of life. So we try to manage all of those things.
Wow. And so who do you expect to attend the event tonight?
You know, we're hoping, we sent out a postcard to all the survivors that are on our list, hoping that they'll come by and take a look. And got some nice free hors d'oeuvres for them to come and meet with the staff. And but I truly think that anybody that's concerned about nutrition and cancer affects so many, you know, it's like one in three people are going to be affected by cancer. So odds are somebody in your family, you're either a caregiver, you're a spouse, you're somebody who's trying to do the right thing for those that are dealing with cancer. And so anybody that is thinking, gosh, I heard about those superfoods or I heard, you know, whatever, this is a good time to come down and chat with the staff about what they think is good. And the thing that I've learned about cancer treatment centers, because it's not a large, you know, center that is based a lot of folks out of Juneau, but we have a number of folks in Juneau that have taken advantage of them. And what I've heard them say is how integrative the care is, and the fact that they get the fact that nutrition plays a role. They get the fact that stress and all the other parts of being a survivor are really taken into account, and it's a real team approach. And so I'm also interested just in what they do as an organization and as a group of hospitals. And, you know, we're always happy in Juneau with a visiting oncologist and not a lot of cancer treatment here in our community. It's wonderful to have expertise come in from the outside and find out what's really kind of going on in the lower 48.
So what knowledge do you expect to share?
Well, I think a lot of the nutrition piece and specifically just kind of sharing a lot of our treatment model. And as Trish had mentioned, that you know, cancer affects the whole family. So it's a really important part of our treatment model that we do an integrative approach and a holistic approach to cancer. And it's not, you know, we treat the cancer. We can do, you know, surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. But we also realize that nutrition is important. And then while you're going through chemotherapy, that naturopathic medicine is important to supplement anything that your body's losing through the treatment options. You know, we focus a lot on mind-body medicine because, again, your body will go through the chemo and the surgery and the radiation, but your mind really has to be prepared for the journey. So we'll work with our patients to make sure that they're comfortable. We focus a lot on spiritual support and, you know, kind of a non-denominational approach for people to understand that cancer is, this is not your grandmother's cancer. There's a lot of different research methodologies out there. It's changed a lot, but there is a reason for hope with cancer care. So we focus a lot on that. We focus on the caregiver because a lot of times our patients, we focus a lot on late stage and advanced cancers, and the way our treatment model works, it will focus on a lot of those different areas. But sometimes the patient is more concerned about the caregiver than they are about themselves. So in order to ease their minds, we'll focus on the caregiver as well. In addition to providing, you know, chiropractic care, we can do acupuncture, you know, different types of support, pain management, you know, all of those different things, physical therapy and rehabilitation to make sure whether it's, you know, getting your voice back or learning to walk again, all of that, and under one roof, so that you don't have to go to several different doctor's offices or go to a nutritionist somewhere else or, you know, go to a pastoral care place somewhere. It's all under one roof, and that for us, that's an awesome treatment model. And we just want to share a little bit of what we do so that people can see that there are options and opportunities to be integrated.
Great. So where's this happening tonight?
We're at the Hangar Ballroom tonight.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. We're going first class. it starts at 5:30. We'll be there from 5:30 to 7. People can drop by. And especially given, you know, when it's nice weather like this, I'm always afraid that people will go, oh, I've got to go do something else. But, you know, before you start your evening off, come by and say hello and have a snack on us and learn a little bit about cancer and nutrition.
Great. Well, is there anything else you guys would like to share?
Kind of just real quick how Faith was saying that we have everything under one roof, just to paint the picture a little bit better. We have what's called a patient-empowered care model, and so what that means is when a patient comes in to see their medical oncologist, they get roomed by the clinic nurse. The clinic nurse will go in and do her assessment, and then the medical oncologist will go in and do, you know, his treatment planning or whatever, you know, his appointment, and then the naturopathic doctor goes in, the dietitian then goes in, and then the case manager or the care manager goes in. And so you see everybody goes to the patient, and can you imagine having all of these providers come to you without even having to change rooms? And even beyond that, we are very collaborative, so we're communicating the entire time about maybe any symptoms or side effects or issues that that patient had between the last treatment and today. And so it's a very... it's a very great model for our patients. It relieves a lot of their stress and takes off a lot of anxiety that they get to come somewhere and have everything under one roof.
Wow. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show today. Up next is Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, July 15th, 2013. It's the birthday of Thomas Bulfinch, born in Newton, Massachusetts, 1796. He was well-educated and tried his hand at business, but he was never very successful. At age 41, he settled into a job as a clerk at a Boston bank and had no desire to move up the ranks because it left him time to write. He is best remembered for his three-volume study of mythology and legends, which retold classic Greek and Roman myths, the legends of King Arthur, Robin Hood, and folk stories from France, Germany, and Africa. The three books were later combined into one volume entitled Bulfinch's Mythology, first published in 1881 and never out of print since. The book was one of the most important of the 19th century, making mythology accessible to the common American reader for the first time. On this date in 1838, Ralph Waldo Emerson delivered a commencement address to the Harvard Divinity School. Before Emerson graduated from that school, he had given a lecture called The American Scholar to the Harvard Phi Beta Kappa Society, in which he spoke of his philosophy of transcendentalism. Published that same year, the speech made Emerson famous, and it brought the ideas of transcendentalism to young men like Henry David Thoreau. Emerson had been a Unitarian minister, but he had since resigned and was becoming very critical of the current practice of Christianity, which he made clear in this commencement address. He said, "The true Christianity, a faith like Christ's in the infinitude of man, is lost." Many in the audience were incensed by Emerson's speech. It was 30 years before Emerson was invited back to speak at Harvard. It's the birthday of the philosopher Jacques Derrida, born in Algeria in 1930. He's one of the founders of the theory of deconstructionism, which he presented in the book Of Grammatology. The theory assumes that there is no common intellectual structure or source of meaning that unifies a culture. When applied to literary criticism, it holds that a single text can have multiple meanings which underlie and subvert the surface meaning of the words, often capsizing the author's intended meaning. Derrida generally refused to define deconstruction. When asked to do so once in an interview, he said, "It is impossible to respond. I can only do something which will leave me unsatisfied." And here's a poem by David Ray entitled At Emily's in Amherst. On this day of our visit, they are spraying the attic for spiders, hoping to kill a black widow or two, and I know she would not like that. Outside, standing between cypresses, I imagine her as a girl playing in cool shadows, little Emily, struck through the heart with an icicle of loneliness. Upstairs, her tiny bed, the white dress with pearl buttons, and the bureau where she left the poems folded, each with a stitch or two of blue thread. I look across the field to where they carried her on a door, as if to a bed with wrought iron railings. There she lies silent while we fall to our knees, speak to her. Sipping wine from the dandelions of her yard, I ask her about the lover, if there was one, and I feel certain I am that lover, all she could look forward to. Yet I am not such a bad choice. I sit devoted for hours, loving her well, sharing the wine, the growing darkness, and I promise to come back to think of her always. At Emily's in Amherst, a poem by David Ray from his collection The Music of Time, published by the Backwaters Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins, hoping you will join us next time on the Writer's Almanac.
This is Bird Note. We may be more indebted to birds than we know. Gordon Hempton, the sound tracker, explains.
Hearing is vital for all animal survival. What is the ear listening to? So I was curious about the human range of sound. There's this narrow bandwidth from 2.5 to 5 kilohertz that are the resonant frequencies of our auditory canals where we have super sensitive hearing. Somehow, that bandwidth in our ancestors' environment was listening for something which was essential for our ancestors to survive. Well, as it turns out, it's a perfect match for birdsong. Well, why would our ancestors have to hear birdsong? Well, we come from a nomadic ancestry. And if we hear a bird song, then we're also listening to an area which has food, water, and an extended favorable season long enough to raise the young off the nest. Bird song is the number one indicator of habitats prosperous for humans.
The soundscape featured in today's show was recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com.
I love KTOO. All these wonderfully entertaining things that I listen to while I paint.
That's Juno artist Constance Baltuck, who has generously donated her painting, Waterfall Salmon Creek, as a 40th anniversary fundraising gift for KTOO. We're offering a limited edition of 200 prints, signed and numbered by the artist. All proceeds benefit KTOO. To learn more, visit kto.org/anniversary.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew, and up next, we have a story from Mudrooms by Clint Farr that was recorded in May.
We're going to invite up next Clint Farr. Now, we've seen Clint up here before. He told a very engaging story about a German shepherd, a dancing with a German shepherd. I think it was a part of that story. Clint Farr was born in Atlanta, Georgia in 1972. He came to Anchorage, Alaska in 1976, went back to Georgia in 1978, moved back to Anchorage in 1980, moved to Juneau in 1995. Moved back to Anchorage in 1995. Moved back to Juneau in 1996. Moved to Seattle in 1996. Moved back to Juneau in 1998. Moved back to Seattle in 1999. Moved back to Juneau in 2000 and has been here ever since. So please welcome Clint Farr.
All right, something fishy. Holy moly. If there is a common denominator of Alaskans, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, pink, hermaphroditic, Martian Alaskan, it is salmon. We love our salmon. And salmon was a huge part of my childhood growing up. And so this isn't so much one story as an amalgam of what I did in the summers with my parents. And it begins with attaching a water hose to an RV on Friday night. And we'd fill up the RV with all this water that we would be using for the next 2 days on our trip south along the Seward Highway. And we would take off. And in the 1980s, the Seward Highway was not the wide-shouldered three-lane that you might experience if you've been to Anchorage recently, but a rather narrow two-lane that weaved its way along the coast and up into the mountains. And I would be sitting in the back of this recreational vehicle reading. Now, this motorhome that my parents had, it started when we first bought it as a fully functional motorhome with a refrigerator and a stove and a range and a freezer. And as things broke, Dad never bothered to repair them, so that by the end of that motorhome's life, it was nothing but a mobile rain shelter. But in the back, I was a young boy, and I would read, and I would read things that my parents probably didn't realize I was reading, namely my mom's adult novels. And as I'm sitting back there, in particular, my favorite being the Clan of the Cave Bear series, you might remember. Especially the third book in the series, The Mammoth Hunters, as our prehistoric heroine, Ayla, was making prehistoric love with her Cro-Magnon stud, John Dallar. And that was a dog-eared book, I can tell you that. But then there was also Jim Repine's Fishing Alaska. Now, I might be dating myself by mentioning Jim Repine. He used to have a TV show back in the 70s, but there was that book as well with all the species, and sometimes I would just watch the center line of that road fade into one long fluorescent yellow Strindbrand monofilament fishing line with a fish on the end as I would dream of the adventures that we would soon be having past Girdwood, past Potters, up to the pass in the U-shaped glacial valleys of the Kenai Peninsula. Then we would go down past the Hope Cutoff, and then we would head up to the Summit area, and there was Summit Lake and Summit Lodge, and sometimes we'd have a burger there. Sometimes there was a moose in Summit Lake. Past Summit Lake, we would eventually get to the Y, If you took a left at the Y, you'd go to Seward. If you took a right at the Y, you'd end up in Kenai River Country. We often took a right. And so we took a right, and we ended up in Cooper's Landing. Cooper's Landing had Quartz Creek. Quartz Creek was the place I caught my most beautiful rainbows, caught in the weeds along the riverbank. And I was yelling at my dad, "Get the net!" And we would leave Quartz Creek, and maybe we would go down to the Russian River Campground, but that was always full. It was always full. We never got into the Russian River Campground, so we would go past the Russian River Campground, and we'd go to the ferry at the confluence of the Russian River and the Kenai's. And there I would go across on the ferry and stand shoulder to shoulder with 30,000 of my best Anchorage friends, and I would pull out sockeye after sockeye from the Kenai River. Past that, we get into Skelack Lake Country. There was Skelack Lake Road, and that thing was just washboarded. It just beat the hell out of you as you drove along that thing in an RV, the RV going bam, 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 as it would go. Just beat you to hell. And then from there, we'd head into Sterling, the Sterling Highway. We'd get to Sterling. And we get to, oddly enough, and the Swanson River, and where the Swanson River came into the Kenai River. That was the first salmon ever caught in our family, 1976. A coho. Dad woke me up. I was 4 years old. Showed me this thing. The biggest damn fish I'd ever seen in my life. Eyes just bing, the first memory I ever had. That coho salmon, Swanson River. Past Swanson River, past Sterling, was Soldotna, the King Salmon Fishing Charters, Fishhawk Charters, where I caught my first and biggest king salmon at 47 pounds. My mom caught the biggest king salmon in our family at 55 pounds. She was exhausted. Rod dropped. She falls back. And the fish, also exhausted, slowly floats under the boat. The captain takes the net, reaches under the boat, and pulls out a 55-pound king salmon. It was awesome. Also in Soldotna, Fishhook Road, best day of fishing in my life. Massive sockeye run. From 3 to 6 fish was the limit. In other words, you could catch 6 fish. I caught 6 fish that day. 3 were over 10 pounds. Trophy sockeye in this state is 11 pounds. I was almost there. Past Soldotna, Nanilchik, Russian Orthodox Church on a bluff overlooking Cook Inlet. There's Mount Redoubt. There's Mount Iliamna. And if you squint, you can see St. Augustine. Lost my first baby tooth at that Russian Orthodox Church. And my brother caught the first king salmon in our family's history. And then the Nilchik. And we clammed for razor clams. Past Deep Creek, Anchor River. Went to the Anchor River once with a best friend in a little Honda Rabbit car that shook like Chuck Yeager's plane in The Right Stuff at Mach 1. You remember that? The way it would vibrate? Anyways, that's what his car would do at past the 50 miles an hour. Anyways, we would get to the Anchor River. I caught my king within 15 minutes and then proceeded to bundle up under hefty garbage bags for the rest of the night and tried to keep warm as he fished. That was cold. Finally, we'd get to Homer, and in Homer, we would fish for halibut, and we would fish for halibut on either the Sea Witch, this beautiful, huge boat, or we go with the little six-packs with Firefox, or I can't remember the name anymore, Firefox Charters, let's call it that. Anyways, they had little fast boats, and they had the big boat. Anyways, we would catch all this halibut, and we would have salmon and halibut in our coolers, and it was 5 or 6 o'clock, and it was Sunday, and Dad had to work the next day, and he would drive us all the way home that night. We'd get home at midnight, but it wasn't over yet, because now it was the ripping of freezer paper and masking tape, and we would put it all together, and I would ferry fish up and down into the freezer from the kitchen downstairs to the freezer, and then maybe 2, 3 in the morning, I would fall to bed exhausted and sleep. Until Dad woke us up the next morning at 6 or 7 or 8. And then that was that. Fish, food, and adventure, and above all, family. Thank you.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering family health care in Juneau since 1982. Valley Medical Care, a proud sponsor of Public Radio in Juneau. Information at 586-2434.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon today. This has been Annie Bartholomew. Tomorrow on the show, we'll have Martha Moore hosting, talk to Felix, to Ken Fix, about tonight's retro sci-fi movie, The Planetarium, Planet of the Apes. Dr. George Brown will be here at the Juno United Medical Providers and Parents. We'll talk to William Butler about his new book, 66 Days Adrift. Eddie Reyes will be here to tell us about Saturday's introductory meeting of Pedra de Ayuda. If you miss the Juno Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it in other local, statewide, and national news at ktoo.org. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM downtown in Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tune into K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens at K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.1. An excursion inland in Icy Strait. Hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And Juno, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org. Thank you for listening.
Tragedy provides yet another opportunity for our nation to speak honestly about the complicated and emotionally charged issues that this case has raised.
Attorney General Eric Holder on the death of Trayvon Martin. It's Monday, July 15th, and this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish. The Attorney General's first comments on the acquittal of George Zimmerman come in a speech before the nation's largest black sorority.
I've just almost lost it, really, because I've been really following it really close. Being a mother of two black boys, ages 1 and 4.
Later, the $2 billion behemoth in the world of kids' books, Scholastic Publishing.
One thing that Scholastic and companies that have published other children's and YA hits have demonstrated is that this is serious business.
Plus, a North Carolina brass band known for holy trombones and Sunday shows. First, this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. The sound of protesters in Egypt today who turned out to show their support for ousted Islamist President